Hello and welcome to the Immersion MVA course on PCIT. I'm Pragya Pandey and with me I have Simon Wei. And this is video 7. In video 6, we covered access and information protection experience. In particular, we talked about how users can gain access to corporate resources in order to be productive while working on BYOD devices. In this video, we are going to see how IT can remain in control of corporate data while they provide access to users to corporate resources from BYOD devices. So we are going to cover story B of experience 3, which is around enabling IT control. So allowing access to corporate resources comes with its own set of challenges. IT needs to make sure that there are capabilities that allow access to corporate resources, but at the same time, IT remains in control of corporate data and they meet compliance requirements. So we will see how IT can provide access to corporate resources from personal devices and at the same time, make sure that only authorized users and authorized devices gain access to such resources. So let's see what happens during a device registration process. So Vince, as an employee of Contoso, wants access to company SharePoint site. And in order to gain access, what he does is he workplace joins his device, which we talked about in the previous video. What really happens during the device registration process is that a certificate is installed on the device and a device record is created in the Active Directory. Now, this record represents a relationship between a user and the device, and it is this device record and the linked relationship that is used for device authentication in order to grant access to corporate resources.
So what if in that kind of scenario where I might be in, my wife also works for the same company as me, what would happen if we're sharing a tablet and one of us workplace joins and then gives the tablet to the other person? Do they automatically get access to that second factor of authentication, that workplace joined device, or does something else have to happen around that?
So as I mentioned before, this device record that is created in ADDS is a relationship between a user and the device. So when you register your device, you have to enter your email ID, mm-hmm. which is your work email ID. So a record will be created for you and the device. So when your wife tries to use the same device and is prompted for user credentials, and if she's not an employee of Contoso, she will not gain access to corporate resources.
Excellent. So it sounds like using a Windows device from that point of view works really well.
Exactly. And organizations can use web application proxy to publish websites such as SharePoint, which are web-enabled and claims-aware applications. So now let's get into the environment and walk through the demo on how IT can configure device registration in ADFS.
Excellent. Okay, so I'm going to go and connect myself into the environment, go to the conditional access session, and go to open up the policy. You'll see that this is a pre-recorded demo. The reason for that is that we've already built the environment out in the background. We used it a little earlier, but it's good to be able to see what's happening. So the very first thing that I'm going to go and do is go down to the bottom here and launch in PowerShell, because the first thing that we need to do is get things ready in order to enable device registration. And we need to do that through PowerShell. There's no UI to actually put these things in place. So now that we're inside of our PowerShell command, I can go and just click here and it's going to fill out these details for me. One of the other advantages is that I don't have to remember to type all the PowerShell in correctly. This first thing that we're going to do is actually to create a resource record inside of DNS that will point to our ADFS server. So we'll just go ahead and run that. Then the next line that we're going to add in is going to allow us to then create a second DNS record. It's very important that this is named correctly. This is the Enterprise Registration CNAME. That CNAME also points to our ADFS server. When we have our client device, as we saw earlier, doing the workplace join, it's actually going to go off and look for Enterprise Registration dot whatever the UPN is that's been typed in as part of the username that was typed in as part of the workplace join process. So that has to be correct. We'll say to run that one again. And then next we'll add the next line in here, where we're going to bring the Active Directory module into our PowerShell command line. And then we're going to do something which might seem a little bit strange. We need to set up the key distribution service for Kerberos. And when we do that, we actually have to backdate the time of the KDS root key, basically because it's going to create it with a 10 and a half timestamp. So we can use this command to kind of work around the rules a little bit for that. Once that's done, it gives us a GUID for the KDS root key. And now we can go and create something which is called a Group Managed Service Account, a new type of thing inside of Windows Server 2012 R2, which allows us to create an account inside of Active Directory, which various services inside of our organization, in this case our ADFS service, can use to log on, and we don't have to provide the actual password to the service. The key distribution service just manages all of that for us. The really cool thing, though, is that multiple services can log on with the same account, and we can automatically, in the background, keep that password in sync through Active Directory and the key distribution service, with our administrators never needing to know that password. We'll run that particular line, and then we'll go ahead and go down to Server Manager, go up to Tools, over to the alerts, and then we can see that we need to finish configuring Active Directory Federation services. So we'll go ahead, start that configuration.
So Simon, what we are trying to do here is run these partial commands and run through the federation process to make federation service available on a domain controller?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
You've said exactly what we've done. We've put the federation service in place. I think there's some requirements around being able to actually do that, though, isn't there?
Yes. The device registration service can be set up on an ADFS server. And first, we are setting up federation on a domain controller. And the next step will be to enable device registration service on this server.
Excellent. And that requires certain things like schema extensions if you're running an older version of the operating system?
Yes. So device registration service requires Windows Server 2012 R2. And if organizations are running domain controllers that are older versions of OS, like Windows Server 2008 or Windows Server 2008 R2, they need to upgrade the schema to Windows Server 2012 R2 in order to include the device object in the schema.
Excellent, because it does create that completely new object. So I'm going to go into the wizard here, click Next, and then it's going to ask us to provide the details of how we're going to connect to ADDS. Say Next, that's fine, the current user's good. Then we get to provide the certificate. Everything that happens inside of ADFS is secured with SSL certificates. So in this case, we're going to select a certificate which we've already installed onto this device, which is called adfs.01.contoso.com. Very important, that certificate must be trusted by the client devices that are going to be workplace joining into this environment. We then also have to have one other thing in place on that certificate, which is the SSL certificate has to have a SAN, a subject alternate name, for the enterprise registration service URL that we added in a few moments earlier in the PowerShell. Really important that both of those things are in place, definitely with no typos. I've done that once or twice myself, actually getting the name wrong. Then we provide the Federation services name that gets displayed to our end users. Really important here to make something, put something in place there that users are going to see and accept and know. So you want to be calling it Contoso ADFS or Contoso Corporate ADFS, not just calling it Test 1. They won't understand what that is. They won't know that that's something secure that they need to be signing into. We'll hit Next again. And then it's going to ask us for the Group Managed Service Account name that we provided in the PowerShell that we actually set up earlier. So in this case, we'll just type in the FSGSMA. And then we'll go on Next again. We could use a normal group account for that, but in this case we've decided to use the modern way of doing this kind of thing. Then we have to determine whereabouts ADFS is going to store its information. It needs to do that inside of a SQL database. In this case, we're going to use the WID, the Windows Internal Database, but we could be storing that inside of a managed SQL Server database if that's the way we wanted to go. Say Next again, it gives us the options. Notice that I could go and click on the View PowerShell Script button here, and it will give me the PowerShell to be able to go and deploy this again myself. One or two things to want to change in there, things like the certificate thumbprint. That is going to be the certificate thumbprint that we selected when we ran the wizard for the first time. If you're going to reuse the script over and over again, you're going to want to make sure that you're using the right certificate thumbprint. We'll hit Next on this, and that's going to go off, do the prereq checks, and then we'll hit Configure, which will finally go and configure the environment for us. There we go. Windows Internal Database will install. We'll then put everything into the database and everything will get up and running. And it's important to note that in the background here, what we're actually seeing happen is Windows Server Manager actually configuring a bunch of different servers for us. It doesn't have to be just on the server that we're working on. It could be configuring any server as long as it's connected into Server Manager as one of the members of our pool. So we'll hit close at this point, and then we'll go and have a look at how we would actually connect this stuff up. We'll just go down here to the PowerShell. And now we just need to turn on one or two final things in order to enable the device registration service. Very first thing we need to do is go and initialize the device registration service. So essentially, we've set up ADFS in the previous step. Now we're setting up the device registration service, which is actually the component that allows the workplace join to take place and adds the items into Active Directory. So we'll go and run that line of PowerShell. And strange enough, we're going to say yes to running it. It's going to go away. Add in the various components that need to be installed, set the device registration service up, and then subsequently start the device registration service. And now let's go and run the enable device registration, which will just make sure that everything is turned on fully. And again, starts us up.
One thing that I would like to add here is that an organization may have multiple domains in their environment. And in that case, they will have to initialize and enable the device registration service for each of the domains because that's the information that is required for workplace join and device registration.
So now we're going to have a look at how this looks on a machine. We already saw this a little earlier on, but let's go down to the start menu and just going to make sure for a start that we have our device registration service up and running. And in order to do that, we're going to go to this quite strange looking URL to just check that everything is in place. And we're going to return very quickly, showing us that it is. This is now going to switch over to our client device, and we'll just check that we've done everything correct in this particular case. So we'll type in workplace onto the start screen, hit the search button. It's going to find the workplace settings for us. There we go. And now we're just going to type in our email address. And we'll hit join again, just as we saw earlier on.
So Simon, we saw that Richard, as the IT admin, configured Federation services and he initialized and enabled device registration service for Contoso. So Richard can verify that the device registration was set up correctly by joining his device to workplace, but how exactly he can make sure that a record for his device is created in directory after he workplace joins his device?
Well, the best way for him to do that is to go into Active Directory and actually find the device record for the device that he did just workplace join. So we'll switch back over to Server Manager again, and we'll go and have a quick look for tools. And we're going to open up the Active Directory Administrative Center, which is the new tool inside of Windows Server 2012 for managing our users, our computers inside of Active Directory. So once that's loaded itself up in a second or two, we'll go across here to the Contoso domain on the left-hand side, and then we'll see that we have a entry in here for registered devices. Here we go, just down here at the bottom. And we'll go click on that. And then we can see that we have a device. So we'll now select that device, and then we'll go and select its properties.
So I believe all the device records that are created as result of device registration reside in this organization unit?
Yep, absolutely. They all appear in that OU inside of the directory. One of the interesting things, though, you notice that it's named with this really nice, easy-to-read GUID. Actually, having a GUID there makes it kind of hard, but it's done that way for a reason. And that is because when we think about what we've actually just done, we've created a unique identifier for a user on a device. So we can use neither the username nor the device name in order to identify this particular record. We had to create something, and using a GUID obviously makes it globally unique. We're now just going to go into the attributes editor on the properties page, and we'll start to be able to explore what's been created as part of this device record. And what we'll notice immediately is that we have the display name from the device, so we now know exactly which device it was that was created. Also, a little bit further down on this list, we'll see the owner information for the device if we were to scroll down. So having gone through that, we'll click OK, and we'll cancel away because we don't want to make any changes to that device record. So that brings us to the end of taking a look at Workplace Join, Workplace Joining a device, setting up the Workplace Join process as an IT admin inside of the environment. Pragya, what's the next thing that we need to look at?
Great. So in the end user experience, we saw that users also want access to corporate documents on their personal devices, and they want these documents to be in sync all the time. Now, IT needs to make sure that this document that is stored on the corporate file server is protected and the compliance requirements are met. So with work folders, there are several goals that are met. The first thing is documents are available on end users' devices, but at the same time, classification can be applied, and these documents can be RMS encrypted in order to protect sensitive data. Second is the information is still centralized. That is, a copy of the information resides within the corporate boundaries so that it's available and backed up all the time. And the third very important point is that IT can choose to selectively wipe corporate documents from these clients in the event that the device is lost, stolen, otherwise decommissioned or returned to solely personal use. This is made possible through Windows Intune, which we talked about in our Experience 1 in User and Device Management. Organizations can further protect documents by setting up RMS. This is a classification-based encryption that is applied to documents that are classified as being high business impact. So in the next demo, Simon is going to walk us through the process of setting up work folders, creating file classification rules, and then creating an RMS template and using RMS to encrypt documents.
Absolutely. So if we switch over to the environment again, we'll see exactly what we're going to do. First thing that I need to do is make sure that I'm managing the devices that, or rather the servers that have all of our work folder storage on there. So I'm just going to go into all servers and add servers within Server Manager. And I'm going to find my file server. Funnily enough, I've actually named my file servers FS. So I've got FS01, which is the file server that I want for this. We'll move that across into our selected folder and we'll say OK. That then brings FS01 into Server Manager, brings it underneath our management, and we'll go and start to query it for different bits of information. Is it activated? What's actually happening? What are the performance counters doing? Now that we've done that, we instantly see that on the left-hand side here, we already have final storage services installed on that file server, so it's already started to bring in some of that information. And we can actually see that within final storage services, we have work folders installed on this server as well. So I'm going to select the work folders node, and then it's going to show me that I already have a work folder sync share set up. But what I'm going to do now is show you how to set up a second work folder sync share on the same server. So I'll go up here to the tasks menu and say new sync share. Gives us this wizard. We could obviously be doing all of this through PowerShell, as we'll see at the end, but we'll use the wizard to do it live here. Then we need to provide the path for this location, which is d:\work. Folders. I'm just going to check to make sure I get the location absolutely spot on. Work folder user share 20. There we go. And we'll click next. It's going to say it doesn't exist. Can I make the file for you? So we'll say yes, it can make that folder. And then it's going to ask us how it wants us to actually store the details store the folder structure underneath our sync share. If we were using this inside of a multi-domain environment, we might use the second option here, alias at domain. So say, for example, we had Contoso and we had Fabricam, and we had Bob Smith working at both Contoso and also working at Fabricam. That would keep that person's data separate across both domains. In this case, though, we're just going to go with user alias, just use the user's alias. Then we could say that we only want to sync specific folders inside of our work folders folder, but we're not going to do that. We're just going to say next. And then we need to provide a name for the workfolder sync share. We'll leave that just as is. Click next again. And then we need to say who's allowed to access this sync share. So let's just go down here and grab the users that we're going to be using for this. Say add. And we're going to type in workflow. Whoops. And we'll do check names. That's going to go off to AD, find all of our users that are in groups with workflow in the name. I think we'll probably be using workflow 20 for this one. Okay. That adds that group in for us. And we'll select next. Then we can decide whether or not we want to encrypt work folders or whether we want to put a password in place. Pragya, this is some of the controls that that we give to IT as part of the setup of work folders. But what are we actually doing here?
So we are giving IT the control to make sure that the information is protected. And in the event that the device is lost or stolen, there is no misuse of this document. So when we are saying that encrypt work folders, every document that is within the work folder is going to be encrypted so that if the device is lost or stolen or if the employee just leaves the organization, this document is not misused and it is not shared outside the organization.
And that's in addition to anything we put in place with RMS encryption as well. It allows us to have that extra control. And under the hood, that's using EFS, the encrypting file system. So we'll just go down here and select next here. We don't want to put EFS in place in this particular case. And then we'll hit create. That's going to go and create that work folder share for us. So the very next thing that I'm going to go ahead and do in a second is to create a folder classification rule. And that classification rule is going to have a look at the documents that are within that area and actually decide what it might want to do with that information. So in order to do that, I'm going to go up to Tools, and I'm going to go down and select File Server Resource Manager. File Server Resource Manager, if you've not played with it, really cool tool for being able to manage your file servers. You can do things, for example, such as prevent people uploading certain file types to your file server. But it also is the place where we start to put dynamic access control into place on a device. So let's say we're going to use another computer. We're going to connect to FS01 in this case. Say OK. And off we go. We then get access to quota management, file screening, and very importantly, to the file classification management options.
So what we are doing here is using the file classification infrastructure to create a classification rule, which looks for a certain string or expression or regex in the documents within the work folders. And based on that criteria, the documents will be marked as having high business impact so that we can later decide to protect such sensitive documents.
Absolutely. So I'm going to go across here and configure our classification schedule, because classification is going to happen on a schedule. We want to make sure that things happen at certain points in time. But we also want to make sure that classification is going to happen as people change or update their documents. So we could go in here and we could enable a fixed schedule in time. So for example, every Sunday in the evening, we would actually go through and reclassify everything to make sure everything is classified. In this case though, we're working in a demo environment and we've already pre-configured that classification process. So we'll click OK. And then the very next thing that we need to do is go and configure the classification rule for high business impact. Let's go in here and select the create option here. And then let's give this a name. Let's call it high business impact. I'll just type in HBI, it's a bit quicker. And let's copy and paste that description from over in these side notes just here. There we go. Then we'll go to the scope tab. We need to say whereabouts this is actually going to apply. What we're going to do is just change the scope setting. So for a start, we'll go down to set folder management properties. And we're going to add in a location. We'll hit path. And we're going to select the D drive where we created our work folder user share. Say next. Then we're going to say what types of files we're expecting to find in this location. So we're starting the classification process. I'm going to say group files and user files and click OK. We'll then hit close. And now we have basically configured a classification rule which will look in that location and say anything in this location is of these types. Now what we need to do is configure our rule so that we can go and pick those types up. So we'll now go and tick group types, and you can see it appears inside of the following folders included in the scope, and user files, and the same thing happens. Let's move along to classification. We can see that we are doing a content classifier. We can see that we're going to provide, that means that we're going to actually look inside the file, see what's in the file, and then change the classification of the file based on its content. Then we need to apply the properties that we're going to put in place. So in this case, we're going to say anything that matches this rule is going to be set to an impact of high. We could have low or moderate as well. We'll go down to configure, and then we get to actually configure how we're going to set the that kind of looking inside of the file to work. In this case, we have regular expression or regex selected by default. You could sensibly use this to look for lots of different things. I'm going to use it to look for a string. I could, however, build a regex which would actually look inside of a document for, say, a credit card number. Could be useful if you're a financial institution and you have people that are potentially saving credit card numbers into files where they maybe shouldn't be, maybe for activities that you wouldn't like them doing. In this case, though, we're going to type in Contoso confidential, and we're going to look for that inside of the actual contents of the file. Say OK. And then we can reevaluate the properties and overwrite the existing values. And let's clear the user classify properties, I think, is what I want to go for. Just double check. The value, okay. Yeah. In fact, actually, let's leave that in text. Okay. That's then going to create that rule for us, HBI. We now need to actually do something with the rule that we just created. So we need to create some kind of action that when we find the find documents which are classified as HBI, we need to do something with that. So we're going to close down FileServer Resource Manager, and then we're going to have to go and configure rights management. So in order to do that, I'm going to go and log on to another server, onto Storage Server. I'm going to log on to App20, hit connect.
So Simon, are we going to create a rights management services template first and then apply RMS encryption to sensitive documents?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's okay. Exactly what we're going to go and do. So before I go in there, I'm just going to go and change the screen resolution down to a size where we can see it. Check my details. Yeah, that's okay. And we'll type in our username. Okay.
So I believe the RMS template is going to define what kind of permissions a particular user or a group has on a particular document. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. That's exactly what we're going to do.
And I would like to add that for RMS encryption to be applied to sensitive documents, organizations should have an RMS environment previously provisioned for the AD RMS to take action and encrypt the documents that are classified as having high business impact.
Absolutely. Before we do this, we do need to have built that environment out. So I'm going to go and just turn on smart sizing so that we can see the screen better. And then I'm going to go down to our start screen, go to administrative tools, and I'm going to go into the rights management services section. Here we go. To directory rights management, there we go. Okay, then I'm going to add a cluster in. We're going to connect to the correct cluster here. Let's just remind myself of what the name of our cluster actually is. It's ADFS01, and we'll hit finish. Okay, I'm just gonna go and try and do that again, because maybe that's not worked. It's a little strange. ADFS01 and finish. So I'll go up, select my ADFS01, pull that down, we see the rights policy templates underneath, and I'm just gonna maximize this screen so that we can see things a little better. Then I'm gonna go down and create a distributed rights management policy template. And at this point we need to add in a language. So I'll add in English United States, and we'll call this Contoso View, Confidential View Only 20. And just to save me typing, I'm just going to copy this description in from here, and hit add, and then we'll hit next. Then we need to add in the users that are going to have this policy applied to them, so we'll say add. And select the email address of the group. I'm going to type in, I'm just going to copy and paste this email address in this place. There we go. Let's take that extra space out from the end. Say OK. And then we're going to give this person view access to the file. We'll then add in another group here. And we're going to have all of these immersion users access. OK, and we'll take off those blanks at the end. And select OK. These people are also going to have view rights to the file.
So what this means is if a document is RMS encrypted and a user who is in this group tries to access that document, will get view-only access?
Absolutely, yeah. Okay. And if they're not in that group, then they won't get any access to it at all. So in this case, we could also set when this policy is going to expire, when it's going to get revoked, but we're just going to hit the finish button. Now that we've created that policy, we need to go and actually apply that with a rule inside of our server manager environment. So let's go back into server manager, and we'll go back to file server resource manager again. Again, we're gonna connect to another computer, and we're gonna connect to FS01.
So what we are trying to do now is take some action after file classification rule is in place and an RMS template is in place. What to do if RMS service comes across a document that meets all this criteria, which is a high business impact document and contains some confidential information, we can use the RMS template to encrypt this document. Is that what is happening?
That's exactly it. So we've classified, now we're gonna take some kind of action. So we'll go into our classification rules section. I should bring these down so that we can see what's happening. We'll find our HBI rule. Let's go and configure the classification rule. And you know what? I'm actually in the wrong place at the moment. I've already configured my classification rule. I now need to configure my file management tasks. So we're going down to file management tasks on the left-hand side, and we're going to create a new file management task. What we're going to do is actually look at a folder location, determine whether or not there is anything in there that matches the right set of conditions, and then we're going to apply the RMS encryption to them. So in this case, let's give it a name, HBI 20, it's always good. And I'm just going to copy this automatic information from the right-hand side here, type the name. Then I need to scope where this rule is going to apply. Let's just change that name for a second here. HBI Impact, I've obviously already done this once, so we'll go to scope. Hopefully next, there we go. Now we need to scope the rule. We're gonna say what it's gonna apply to. And in this case, I'm actually going to add in the specific folder where I'm storing my work folder sync share. The reason for that is I could have selected group files or user files if I wanted to apply to everything on this file server, which had been categorized according to being either user or group files. But in this case, I wanna be a little bit more specific about it. Next, I want to go to my action. And we now need to say what this rule is actually going to do, what it's gonna put in place. In this case, we're going to use that RMS encryption rule that we created earlier. I'm going to use the rule 20. Now it's looked for the details off of our RMS server. And then I'm going to go to notification. Nothing I need to do there. Go to report. Nothing I want to change here. You do get reports about everything that's happened as part of your process here for dynamic access control. I'm going to go to condition though, and add in two very important things. We'll go down to add, and we're going to go and make sure that we only want to RMS encrypt things which are classified as being of an impact equal or greater than high. So that'll make sure that everything that's high impact automatically gets classified and protected with RMS. Say okay, and then we'll go to schedule. Now that we're on the schedule or schedule tab, I can actually suggest when we want to run this particular file management task. Obviously, I want this to run all the time so that when people actually do upload documents to our work folder share, that they actually automatically get RMS encrypted at that point. But more importantly, I actually want to run this on a schedule as well. In fact, in this case, I'm going to suggest every Sunday, because just in case the RMS service is down, but our work folder server is up, we do want to make sure that we then go back and catch things when the RMS server becomes back online. So we're going to put a schedule in place for that. Then we're going to say OK. And we now have everything in place to take us through the scenario that we showed you a little bit earlier on, whereby somebody went onto their work folders share and then created a file, had the details of Contoso Confidential in there, and it automatically got writes encrypted. Pragya, that brings us to the end of the demo.
Thank you, Simon. That's great. So in this demo, we saw how an IT admin can create work folders, set up work folders, create classification rules, create an RMS template, and then use AD-RMS to actually encrypt sensitive documents. So to recap this session, we went through the setup process that an IT admin needs to follow to set up ADFS and device registration, so that the end users can workplace join their devices to get access to company resources. Then we went ahead and we configured work folders. Mm-hmm. And then to further protect the documents, we used a dynamic access control and automated RMS to encrypt sensitive data. That brings us to the end of this PCIT course and video 7, which was around enabling IT control in experience 3. So in this course, we covered experience 1, which was around user and device management, experience 2, which was about desktop virtualization, and the last experience 3, was about access and information protection. So this concludes our PCIT immersion course. Thanks for being with us and watching all the videos. Thank you so much.
Thank you.